Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Well, welcome back to Stocky Jacks. I'm just about wearing the board. SP Futures up $16. NASDAQ Futures up $76. Dow Futures up $118. We're encouraging the Fed, shall we say. It's a... In my 35 years of doing this, I've never seen this kind of action to get the Fed to pour money into the system when the system doesn't need any money. Anyway, new guest today, Mr. Andrew Tenney. Andrew, how are you, buddy?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're coming in loud and clear. Good to have you. You're in the insurance business, but that doesn't mean we're not going to like you. It means we probably are going to like you, you know, type of thing. Because you guys...
By default, it does. The question is... Well, I still have the offer, right? So.
Yeah. Well, the industry has changed, I mean, quite dramatically since like years ago. I mean, we had a gentleman on from the insurance industry a while ago, and a lot of the stuff that he did was in when people gave contracts to either executives or maybe even some athletes. I don't know. He said that some guys might have been doing that. I mean, people are insuring things you never thought they'd be insuring, helping businesses out and so forth. It's not just your life insurance and home and all that other kind of stuff. Matter of fact, it's branched out into a lot of things, and it seems like it's gotten a lot more interesting for people doing it, like you. You know?
Yeah. I think everyone has unique needs, but right now what's happening is everything's going online, and it's sort of becoming like Amazon with the insurance business, where you can, just with everything else, no one really wants to talk to anybody. They'd rather just go to some websites, make a few clicks, and get it. But that's not going to work for everybody. It really depends on the situation. And you might not be doing the right thing if you take matters into your own hands. I'm the type of person that always consults with experts for anything. I really am a big believer in consulting. No matter what you do, forget insurance. Even if any kind of business you're running, anything you want to do, whatever your task at hand is, unless you're the expert, it's really worthwhile to go to the experts.
What do you mean? The internet has made everybody an expert.
What's that?
The internet has made everybody an expert.
Yeah, it has. It has, for sure. Right.
I mean, there's people
true. There's a lot of free information online, yeah.
You know what? It's worth just what you pay for it.
Right.
But even your standard, I mean, how many people, you have everybody in the world selling stuff. I mean, they're like second parties. I mean, you've got ARP, you've got the Chicago Motor Club, you've got everybody in the world, AAA. I mean, everybody's trying to get their finger in the middle of the decision-making process. Does that affect you guys at all? I mean, it must, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, it can. I mean, there's a lot of noise out there in the marketplace. Like, from the way of looking at it, there's a lot of people out there. Everyone has his two cents and his own vision. But I don't look at that as a detriment. I look at that as an asset. That means that that's happening, right? If there's a lot of people out there trying to, quote-unquote, sell something or market something, that means there's a marketplace for it. So it doesn't scare me that much. I think that you can do a lot to separate yourself, and there's so much research you can do as far as digital marketing and social media marketing, copywriting. There's so many skills to learn and so many things to know that So I focus more on the long term. Like, what could you do, you know, as just an entrepreneur, is focusing on honing your skills and building value for yourself. And people will come to you. They can see you have a skill. They're going to come to you.
I was actually, I saw some people last night. My buddies from the Federal Reserve, I met them because one of the gentlemen's leaving. It kind of is going away party. And Of course, we start discussing slash arguing, you know, Fed policy and so forth. And we were talking about the, you know, the plight of, you know, every man. And I don't know who your market is. I'm sure it sounds like it's just about everybody. But in the middle group, we're talking about credit card interest and how it's actually gone up since the Fed has decided to make interest rates essentially zero for the last 10 years, which is not exactly what you'd be looking for if you're looking for any kind of trickle down or, I mean, less, you know, as a Fed, you wouldn't expect that when you lower interest rates, when you get down to the schmuck on the street, that his rates are actually going up, you know, because you've got sort of an inefficient marketplace or whatever. But clearly people have issues now, that in their lives, and companies have issues that maybe they never had before. And a lot of them go around interest rates. And for a while, weren't insurance companies essentially able, they'd set themselves up where they were still making, I'll say, 4% on stuff that they had, you know, their entire portfolio was still making 4, maybe 4.5, maybe 5 on some, you know, bonds they had bought. No, of course, at today's price they wouldn't be, but still their portfolio was making some money. And a lot of their products essentially took advantage of the fact that they were still making interest and nobody else was. Is that still going on? I mean, some of these annuities, I mean, they're promising people 3-4% when really nobody else can get that anywhere else, and they were selling a lot of them. I mean, is that still part of the, is that interest rate advantage? I'll call it an advantage. I don't know if it still is. Is that part of the you know, what products are being offered?
So I'm not into so much the investments, quote unquote, investment products of the insurance business.
Okay.
I only do term.
Okay.
I think that Transamerica, even all the companies got sued back in the day because they were quoting people. It wasn't that long ago they got sued, but Transamerica got sued, some other companies, because they were quoting people at these, you know, big growth rates over time. But insurance companies don't really invest your money. They invest their own money.
Right, oh yeah, absolutely.
And they have some products that will sort of mimic the investments. But you mentioned something at first that I'm about my market. I do focus on millennials and entrepreneurs in particular. I like to help entrepreneurs and their vision. And my job is to protect the work you've done and what's come forth and give you that foundation that you're starting. Right? That's what life insurance really is supposed to be. What is insurance? It's not an investment product. That's the way it's been marketed, because people are afraid or don't want to spend, you know, $50 a month on a 20-year term policy. So insurance is the sharing of risk. It has nothing to do with investing. It's the sharing of risk. You have a group of a certain amount of people that don't want to suffer a loss, so you each pay a small amount of money instead of one of you suffering this massive loss. That's all it is. It's really that simple. So as far as, you know, interest rates it's not really my business. I don't really think that it's my department. I think that's more of your expertise, Tom, if you're a financial advisor or whatnot, as far as, you know, dealing with investments. But if you just look at the returns, you'll see they're just not very compelling for, you know, some of these, you know, what they call permanent products.
What Andrew's talking about, different parts of insurance products. If you go to get, say, a term life policy, the interest doesn't matter to you because you're not investing your money, the company is. But it matters to the company and how they can price the term life, correct?
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you always have to see what the company's doing. You should always check to make sure that it's a, you know, legitimate company, that they have a strong rating and whatnot. And they all advertise that. All the big players will tell you on their website. They'll have a page that shows you what their financial backing is. And that's how they make their money, right? It's through investment. But insurance companies don't make money through your premium. They make money through investment.
But they also sell products. Well, there also are products. Doesn't sound like you're too big on them. I'm not too big on them either, by the way, where there's an investment piece of what you give the insurance company. Now, that's on you. Whether if you want it in the market, you want it in bonds, you want it something else. So you can actually get, for lack of a better term, a mutual fund in insurance combined together. Which, you know,
you could do that. Yeah. I mean, you could do basically anything else. I mean, you could do anything except whole life, and you would make more money.
Right. Yeah.
I would sooner buy a fancy vacation than whole life. That's how much I think of it. But it's sort of like a war between, you know, the insurance agents business and the financial advisors, you know, sort of, you know, at it with each other a little bit, and different ways of handling it, dispute. You know, I don't question anyone's integrity if he's a big believer in whole life or whatever. but it's just not. I can't do it in good conscience. I just can't.
Well, advantage for those of you, I'm not certainly no insurance expert. That's exactly why I have Andrew on. But when you look at, I won't say unintended. Maybe they were intended by somebody, but some of the unintended consequences of our government's tax thing. I mean, more of the big advantage. I mean, it's like an IRA or 401k, right? You get a tax dodge on it. So whole life, all the interest and interest money you make in the whole life, when somebody dies, that goes to them as essentially return to premium when it's actually somewhat of an investment. But it's taxed as if it's a benefit, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they tell you, it's tax-free. But I mean, here's the problem, okay? Let's get back to that. What is they advertise it as tax-free. They're really good at selling it, you know? They'll tell you it's tax-free, and you have to have it forever, and it's guaranteed to pay. But back to what we're saying, what is insurance? Insurance is a sharing of risk, right? So everyone's going to die one day.
Yep.
So if I said to you, like, look, we're going to guarantee you this payment, how is an insurance company going to make money on that? I mean, they're promising to pay you this money. Right, so the only way you're going to get this payment, let's say it's $1 million policy, you know, permanent $1 million policy, is if you give them $1 million and then some.
Well, right.
I mean, they have to make money on you, right? You're not going to give them $50 and then they're going to get $50 a month and they're going to guarantee you $1 million for the rest of your life. The math doesn't add up.
No. Well, I mean, but they have, there's a lot of, actually, I've always found, Andrew, on that end of it, it's very similar to, the people that I knew at when I was at Pullman that were on the Pullman's retirement, you know, they had an old-time pension plan, a defined benefit, right? So the people at Pullman ran the pension fund, so at the end of the day, when you were 65 and you retired, you were paid out of the Pullman pension fund. You know, you had your Social Security, that was separate, but... So some board had to sit there and say, okay, we're gonna get our guys that do the math, actuarial stuff, and we got all these people working here, and we're gonna ask these guys how long are they gonna last after 65, which now people are lasting a little longer. But you have those numbers, and you have the numbers that say, you have the big numbers, what interest rate are we gonna make? So somewhere buried up the floors in the insurance company, there's a group that's making these decisions, right? They're going to say, Andrew, you can charge this guy $60 a month for $100,000 whole life if he's, or not whole life, term if he's 30 years old and good health. Because we think this is how long all these people are going to last. You know, by the way, this is the interest rate we think we're going to make for the next 35 years. I mean, those decisions are being made someplace, correct?
Right, and that's exactly how it works. I mean, it's multi-level, and my level is I deal with the underwriters.
Okay.
The underwriter assesses the client's health risk. So, and that's kind of interesting how that works. Talk about that a little bit. The technology's changed a bit where a lot of companies still do the classic way where you'll have to take a paramedical exam, which is, you know, maybe 10 minutes or so. We'll take a blood sample and check out your blood profile. They'll look into your health history and see if, you know, you've had any illnesses or any conditions or concerns. But now we'll talk about the other ways it changed. So they do that, and then they'll assess how much, you know, they want you to pay based on that. There'll be different ratings for, you know, how severe your health concerns are. Like, if you just had cancer last year or 2 years ago, then you can't really get term life, right? They'll charge you a ton if you get it. That's what people call me, by the way. People only call me when they're sick. Nobody calls me when they're healthy. They only call for life insurance when they're sick already. But, for the most part. But the way it works now is kind of cool, actually. There's a company called LexisNexis, I'm sure you've heard of.
Yep.
And they do a little differently, where they don't necessarily do a medical exam. They will actually look into, they have massive amounts of data, LexisNexis. They have all kinds of criminal background, medical background, financial background information, all kinds of different things. And they compile those things and can actually determine odds of mortality based on your behavior throughout your life. And it's surprisingly very interesting.
I got to ask, do crooks live longer or shorter lives?
Much shorter, yeah. The stats are...
Really?
The stats are overwhelming, yeah. Convicted felons live much shorter lives. The stats are overwhelming. You could look into it. And if someone commits more than one felony, then he's actually more likely to live a shorter life. the more felonies you commit. So for example, like no insurance company is going to cover you if you're in prison, right? Anyone in prison cannot get life insurance. I don't know any company personally that'll cover you.
Can they ever, if you get insurance, I mean, a long time when people like you were talking to me when I was your age, let's put it that way, they would sell you insurance and they would say, okay, if you buy, you know, it was cheap back then, if you say, you know, and I was a pretty healthy guy when I was 25, 30, still am, thank God, but the, you know, now I'm 30, they say, okay, you can buy this term thing for 25 hours a month, and oh, by the way, of course, you know, as you age, it's going to go up a little bit more, but not only are you guaranteed to be able to have the term, but you can, like, double or triple it anytime you want, like if all of a sudden you had some kids and we're not even any further medical tests or anything. Is that kind of stuff still going around?
That's interesting, to actually increase the value of it. Not the companies I'm contracted with. I mean, every agent is, some agents are captive to one company, some agents are brokers. Some broker a few different carriers. None of my carriers have that. It's interesting. I'm not sure. But for me, let's say you're 25 years old and you get a $500,000 policy through me, and then 10 years from now you want $1 million, you'd have to get a new policy. It wouldn't be something you could just add on. The only thing the company, I don't know anyone who does that personally. The only thing companies do now is you can convert it to a permanent policy. You can convert it to whole life, whatever. But like I said, right? Why would they let you do that? And this is another proof. Why would they let you just convert it to whole life without any more health assessment in 20 years? Because they make a lot of money on it. That's the only reason why. So the truth is that would actually kind of make sense if somebody is really sick after 15 years, right? If he's gotten cancer or something, then maybe you want to do that. But which actually kind of leads me to the other thing is that life insurance changed a bit. It doesn't just cover a death benefit anymore. At least the companies I work with. Is that if somebody gets cancer, a heart attack, or stroke, then they'll actually pay out up to 100% of the death benefit, depending on how severe the illness is, while you're still alive. So if you get down to the nucleus of what life insurance is covering, right, it's covering loss of income. If I told you you'll never make another dime forever, right, then your family would never recover from that. They'll be asking people for money for decades. And that's what happens. I know people personally that are well off that have widows still asking them for money 10 years after their husband's died. But what if you get cancer and you can't go to work for a year or two? Then they'll still pay you, like, a lot of money, a lot more than disability insurance pays. Not that disability insurance is the problem, but we're talking, real cash, like, in your hand, the check.
Well, it would make sense. I think what they were trying to sell me, and it's actually a product that, like you say, maybe now you don't want to sell, but it's essentially they would, pick a producer I know. First of all, you're single, then of course you get engaged, and then, I might want to say, I would like 100,000 policy, but as soon as we have kid number one, I want it to be 300, and kid number two, I want it to be 600. I mean, I don't know why you're saying you have to take an exam every time it bumps up.
So, you wouldn't necessarily need an exam with some companies. If it's only up to 300,000, like you're talking, actually a lot of companies don't require medical exams. I mean, most companies don't even require medical anymore for that small amount, unless they have a reason to, unless there's some health concern that they really want to get some more information. But I wouldn't do that because that's going to cost you more, actually. Okay. Instead of just getting, here's the way to do it. Here's the way to figure out how much insurance you need. You take roughly 10 years of income, and then the term should end when your youngest 14 children are out of the house, right? So if you're not going to have any more children, then the 20 years fine, right? If you have a baby at home. If you're going to be having kids 10 years from now, then a 30-year term is fine. Again, 10 years of income, if something happens, you just take whatever money comes from life insurance policy, you put it in a mutual fund, you put it in index fund, whatever works for you, and then it'll make you roughly 10%, and then there you go. There's your income replacement for good. That's the way to handle it. I wouldn't recommend getting a $100,000 policy for a family. It's not a lot of money, and it's very simple. Let me ask you, Tom, if I give you $100,000 right now, would you retire on it?
Well, no, you wouldn't. It's just enough to get you in a grave, basically. It's
yeah, I mean, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's not even close. So that's the point. It's income replacements, right? And if you want to get more later, it's fine, but start with whatever your income is, times 10, and then if your income increases, then great, that's a nice problem to have, right? Then now you're making twice as much money, then you can replace that. So I wouldn't just get a second policy. I would almost replace it. I would sign up for, let's say, for $1 million, because you make $100,000 a year, you get $1 million policy. Now you're making $250,000 or something.
Now, then you can where do you get to the number?
$500,000 policy and get rid of the original $1 million.
Now, where do you get to the number where, say, said producer starts to have to watch his back in the house?
what do you mean exactly?
Just saying.
Oh, you mean someone's going to get a hit job on him? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, Matty Weber goes out and gets like a $10 million policy, and yeah. The fiancé says, "I don't even have to go through with this marriage at all for $10 million."
Some people have written like $100 million. You can get like up to $65 million with some companies, up to $90 million with some companies. But if that happens, then yeah, they do a lot of research. They want to find out what's going on, and even if somebody dies, they do research. If there's anything suspicious, they can deny payments. You know, like if a guy died in Venezuela mysteriously, you know, they want to know what's going on. That's very strange. What are you doing down in Venezuela? So you know,
I'm curious about that. I mean, since you brought it up, I wasn't going to. I actually know of two cases where the insurance company didn't pay. I don't know if they paid to this day, but they didn't pay for a while. And my curiosity is, you know, that's pretty interesting, but I don't know how they set themselves up above the law. One of them was, I'm not going to mention any names, but somebody from the trading floor, say his wife mysteriously died in their Jeep in front of the house. And the gentleman was tried on murder charges and was essentially found not guilty. I won't say innocent, but he was found not guilty. And the kids went off to live with, like, her parents. And now the insurance company refused to pay him because they thought he, I don't know if he had just bought her. My point would be, they owe somebody the money. Now, I would think that if they said, we're not paying you, we're paying the grandparents for the kids' education and all that kind of thing, that part I might get, but the idea you don't pay anybody is a little strange to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, for sure. My hunch is that the legal standard in court for sending someone to prison is a different legal standard for what the insurance company owes. It could be that in their mind, their investigation, they determine like, okay, this guy did it, just he couldn't be proven guilty in the court of law. And if the beneficiary kills the primary insured, then no one's going to pay you. Now, what would happen in that case is, I mean, he'd have to hire a lawyer. If he can actually prove, he'd have to go to civil court with the insurance company. I mean, that's pretty intense. I mean, those are, you know, few and far between. But, I mean, if that happens, they have to have good reason for that. They're not just going to say no for no reason. It has to be, you know, pretty overwhelming that, you know, I don't know what the standard is exactly for them. You'd have to ask them, but it could happen.
Because it takes you 5 years to assume. The other one was a guy who used to come on the show, actually, with Dr. J and I. And he, way too long of a story, but the bottom line is he was cleaning his gun and shot himself and died, and the coroner ruled it an accident. An insurance company ruled it, said, no, in our mind, it's a suicide. And he had a bunch of the little policies you're talking about, $10,000 here, $20,000 there. Well, he ends up, you know, he wasn't a young man. He got married, this younger lady, and they have a kid. He decided to cancel all the other policies. He probably had like 7 or 8 of them and get one big policy. And evidently, on the big policy, what, they don't pay out on suicides for the first year or something? Well, it was in like the first...
The first 2 years, they're not paying for suicides. Every company's like that.
Right.
Every company does not pay the first 2 years for suicide, which is understandable.
Right.
You know, that makes sense. But I'm surprised that they ruled it was an accident. They still didn't.
I may have paid by now.
As a lawyer that does this, it's good to, you know, have communication with someone that if you want to. I don't work for the insurance company, right? I work for you. I work for the client. I don't care about the insurance company at all. They're fine. You know, they'll be quite all right. So, you know, if God forbid something like that happens, then, you know, I mean, just as much time we could talk about it, you know, 1 minute, just in the information you've given me. I would take him to court, you know, my expert legal opinion.
Well, that's the thing. If you take him to court, it's 5 years. You're talking about people don't have any dough. But real quick, we don't have that much time. First of all, I want you to give a shameless plug, and we're going to put your name out and everything. But how did you get to be, I mean, you're a young man. How did you get out of the I'll use the term, out of the clutches of Northwestern or somebody like that. Don't you have to be like sponsored to get in the business, like in our business? How'd you get to be such an independent guy at such a young age? I mean, it's interesting.
So, you know, I appreciate the question. You know, I've always been into entrepreneurship. Like, I love being an entrepreneur, and I don't even know if, you know, insurance is the that's it, man. Like, I'm just doing insurance forever, and that's it. It's just, I think, I look at it like a springboard. Just a way to build my skills, build my speaking skills, build my sales skills, the copywriting skills, marketing skills, and things like that. But getting into the business is actually not that difficult. It's part of the reason I chose it is because it's not that tough. It's actually harder to get into the securities and okay. into even mortgages, which, not that those are so incredibly difficult to get into. You can, it can be done.
Well, you gotta be hired by somebody.
I would definitely recommend it for somebody that just wants to explore and get into work and get into business and build a brand. I built my own brand. You can look at my website at atidins.com, atidins.com. So atid means future in the Hebrew language. It's all about protecting your future and your dreams. No one says, and there's not a person in the world that will say no to his dreams.
Right.
Larry says no to his future, right? That's the point. I mean, for 1% of your income, you could protect all of your aspirations forever, right? I mean, for however long you need, right? After 20 years, hopefully you've reached your dreams at that point. That's the idea.
Well, thank you very much, man. It was very interesting. I want to have you back talk about the copyright stuff and everything. There's a lot of questions you brought up that I'd like to be able to ask deeper questions on. So what do you say? Come back on soon, and we'll tweet out all the stuff on you. It was interesting. I love the fact that you're an independent. I know somebody who... broke away from one of those big firms, and boy, it took him forever in attorneys to break away. It was real tough because he had a big book in one of those places. They didn't want to let him go. It was a pretty tough do. Anyway, thank you, and well, like I say, we'll have you back, and we'll tweet out your stuff. S&P futures still up 1450, Dow is up 111. We come back with Mr. Joel Anconin, who's got to be on cloud nine after Michigan's big win last night in the College World Series. We'll talk to him about that and other stuff when we come back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hines, Matt Weber on the board. Hey, Luckbox Magazine, the guide to, what am I doing here? I'm doing my live read. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability is available on newsstands, $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free, that is free, digital subscription. And not a Milton Friedman, no such thing as a free lunch. This is really a free subscription. Luckboxmagazine.com/Jacks. And I would recommend you get at least one of them at the newsstand because they're pretty neat-looking magazines. And if you throw them on your table at home, people think you know something.
And Jeff Joseph is in studio in hour two.
And, I got all kinds of stuff for him today. Last week, I was getting all kinds of emails regarding the last week's show.
It was an interesting topic, the esports gaming stuff.
Yeah, I was talking to Eric about that yesterday. You know, they have classes in gaming and how to put the games together and everything and how to, you know, make games. And he said they don't have a team yet. He said don't say never. But they might one of these days. They were actually, a lot of the kids were interested in it. So it's kind of getting around. S&P futures up 14.75. NASDAQ futures up 15.50. Individual stocks in the Boeing's up 396 as they landed their first order at the Paris Air Show. It's been quite a drought for them, but they landed 787s, not 737s. I guess that's no surprise. Dow futures up 108. Around the rest of the world, we've got over in Europe, we got the DAX up 145, 1.2%. FTSE up 58.8%. CAC around up 75, 1.4%. Everybody knows my opinion that we're going right back to this free money around the world, but I think that's an old game. Nikkei down 151.7%. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 271, that's a full 1%. Oil down 12 cents, 51.81. Well, can that get moving even with all the stuff going on in the Middle East? Brent down 26 cents, 60.68. Remember, what was it, about 4 months ago, Matty? 5 months ago, we were saying Brent was going to be 100. Might be going to be 50, not 100. Natural gas, 239. That's not going anywhere either. RBOB, 167. We've got gold up another 950, 1352. Silver up 8 cents, 1491. Heading back toward 15. Where the market plays whack-a-mole with it. We'll see if it gets through it this time. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're under a dense fog advisory that will remain in effect until 10 a.m. this morning throughout the Chicagoland area. In certain areas, visibility is less than a quarter mile, especially near the lakefront. So give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning, especially if you're downtown near the lakefront, because there is dense fog out there and it's affecting some travel times. But no major accidents to report coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looking much better than yesterday as folks get used to the new lane configurations after the weekend's road construction. Stevenson is our slowest moving expressway right now. No issues on the south side. Only incident to report is actually off the expressways. We have an overturned semi, Lawndale Avenue at Joliet Road on the southwest side. A box truck is overturned into the water. The driver is out and apparently okay, but crews are on the scene trying to get that cleared up. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of fog and clouds early before we have a relatively pleasant afternoon. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 70, much warmer inland. Right now it's overcast, foggy, and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 78. In sports, the 2019 edition of the Crosstown Classic begins tonight at Wrigley. Cubs versus White Sox, 7 o'clock first pitch. Cole Hamels versus Ivan Nova. Both teams scuffling a bit. Sox dropped 2 in a row. Cubs dropped 3 of 4 against the Dodgers. So looking to get back on track tonight at Wrigley. Looking forward to that. Diamondbacks were off yesterday as well. They host the Rockies later on tonight. Chief.
We have Mr. Joel.
Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
I mention last week that Michigan is a baseball school?
Did I mention to you? You obviously weren't listening earlier, and I said, I'm going to one-up Joel because I watched the game last night.
How about that Tommy Henry, huh?
Yeah.
What a good-looking young pitcher. I mean, you know, long ways to go. What an interesting thing. You know, players come from all over the country, and I, you know, last week I talked about that, you know, coming from the South, but Michigan has three players from the Kalamazoo Portage area.
Really?
Three players on the team. I mean, that's a pretty high percentage. But we're definitely joining the run. We are the first team into the World Series. There's a couple loser brackets today. Next game not till Friday. But go blue.
Well, you know, Joel, when you're good, you're good. It doesn't matter where you come from. I mean,
I just think it's interesting that, you know, Michigan has not always been the hotbed for, you know, for baseball players. We've definitely produced a lot of great basketball and a lot of great football players, but, you know, Michigan hasn't been known for baseball. So
I heard it all.
A little nice for a change.
See, I'm all up on this. You guys won in 53. Did you win again? Was it 62?
Last time we were in was back during the roar of 84. That's the last time we were in the World Series, the College World Series.
I'm talking about 62.
It's been a long time. They got a long way to go.
This was before Joel. 53, 62. Evidently, you guys won it in 53.
Yeah, that's a little. Yeah, the 62 is a little pre-me, too. But
yes.
Go a little bit after that, and I fall into that range.
See, you think Joel thought he was going to come on today and be embarrassed by me knowing more about Michigan baseball than him?
If you do your homework, I know you get in there at 5:59 and 59 seconds, and you're ready to go.
That's right. But I mean, I turned the game on last night, and the kid was through six or seven innings, and he was pitching great. There's no way I was turning it off. I mean, he was doing a Kyle Hendricks, Greg Maddux kind of game, but right about 90 miles an hour, never anything over the plate, inside, outside. And I mean, he pitched exceptionally well. He went the whole way. I thought that during the season they play seven innings. They play nine all year?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, because I think sometimes when they get rainouts and stuff, a couple times I've gone and saw. I thought if they got to play like double headers and stuff, they shorten them to seven or something. There's something weird there. I'll have to ask Kevin because he goes to a lot of the games. But what about the kid? Who they beat? Was it Arkansas? They beat.
Florida State.
Well, the kid in Florida State, the Mr. Knows the Toes. I haven't seen that was not a slider. It was more of a slurve. He struck out seven guys in a row. Talk about Knows the Toes. That ball was coming in, like, over my head and landed at my feet. Nobody could touch the thing. And he was the reliever the last three innings on the other team.
What do you think would be harder, to hit, like, what, a fastball for a major league pitcher or run the football in from the one-yard line against a pro football team?
Well, it's harder to hit the baseball, but it's scarier to run in from the one-yard line. I mean,
I think that's dead on.
I don't think there's anything harder than hitting a major league baseball in sports. I mean, I you know, in terms of an individual skill set. But plus the thing's liable to conk you, too, which, you know, it's...
Yeah, with a good offensive line, you might sneak in untouched from the one.
You might.
You might get killed.
Yeah. What did you ever see the movie, when Gail Sayers came back, it was, what the hell was the name of it?
Brian Song.
Oh, that's an old one. Geez.
Yeah, well, Brian Piccolo's wife, they're at dinner, and she goes, well, they ran this play in practice, and Gail Sayers scampered through with it. They all said they're like, they run the play again. They were ready for it. And two guys nailed Piccolo. She goes, you had so many black and blue marks on him I didn't recognize. You know, but, anyway, the, so John, what do you make of, you know, this Fed thing is unconscionable to me that the market's doing this to push these guys to let just a little more money in the system and we'll all be saved. I think it's an old story. I was influenced by reading something from, I think he's a little bit out there, but David Stockman was saying if they do this, it's the dumbest thing they've ever done. If they lower rates here just because they're pressured into it. He goes, they got no business lowering rates. There's no problem with credit. There's no problem with anything. And, you know, for them to just pour money in the system to pump the market up for an election is just unconscionable in his mind. But
and it's a little bit early. I mean, you know, we'll see what the tenor is. I mean, I think they're more expecting it the July meeting than the June meeting. It's you know, the Fed funds rate, it's baked into it. Very market dependent Fed. I'm the same boat as you. Do they need to do it at this point? What happens if we do go into a major recession? I'm a broken record on this. This is what the Fed's going to do. I don't know. I just would not be surprised if they came out tomorrow and said, okay, yeah, we're thinking about it, but we're going to be a little bit more data dependent. I would not be surprised. But once again, I mean, they're going to do what they do. I mean, if you're going to be bumping rate, you know, taking rates down when you're at, you know, 2.5-3% GDP, you know, what are you going to do if we really stall? That's my question.
When you do something that's like never been done before, or at least to this extent, when you go from a 2.5% rate, which most people would think would be accommodative anyway, if you go from 2.5 down to say 0.25%, like we did, and then you're back up to 2.5. There's an implication there that you know, 15, you know, men and women of incredible economic knowledge and worldwide knowledge have sat there for 6 weeks and come out and produced a paper that said, by going from 2.5 to 0.25%, we accomplished these 10 things that we couldn't have accomplished any other way, and it was an unmitigated success. Then I'm with you. I don't think they did anybody any good by going down to 0.25%, or certainly not going from 1.5 to 0.25%. I think the jury's in history is still out on whether that was more harm than good.
You know what, Chief? We can interpret this like all we want, but you know what? I think being in the markets all these years, you can't fight the trend, you can't fight the Fed, and this is what happened. So, you know, the shorts, you know, be out there. You know, we can come up with different scenarios, but The money's flowing into the market. When interest rates go down, historically it's good for the market because there's better return. Why do you want to be stuck in, you know, bonds or any interest rate bearing instrument when you can be in a, you know, stocks paying 3-5% dividend and the chance of, you know, depends which stock you're in. I mean, Procter and Gamble, look at the huge appreciation you're getting that. So, like I said, you can't fight the Fed.
No, hey, yeah, but two things. Aren't you a little concerned the VIX is actually creeping up on these up days, which is bizarre? And secondly, give us a shameless plug on your deal in New York.
Yeah, in Thursday we'll be live in New York City. We're going to do the show from there. First Benzinga Trading Summit. We got your buddy John Najarian, Todd Gordon, a couple of my other buddies. Jeremy Newsom's going to be out there. And trading market talk, you know, it's just going to be a whole day of education. BZProfit.com, code PMP15 if you still want to get in. And I think there's a few seats still left in the trading line. I'll have to check with our staffers here, but filling up fast. Going to have our whole staff out there. My producer from my show, Spencer Israel, Brent Slava, who runs the news desk, the whole shebang, Chief. So I expect to see you out there.
Well, I'm probably not going to make it, but I will be there in spirit. It sounds like a lot of fun. A lot of good guys.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for reminding me.
All right, buddy. You take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Go Blue.
If you want to call in from there, feel free. Let us know how it's going. S&P futures are, we're not going to break though, are we, Manny?
Up to you.
Well, I'd say.
We can keep going.
Why don't we just keep going? S&P futures now up 1775. This is,
Normally we'd have Kenny, but he's on vacation, and he tweeted some picture from some exotic island. So
was it clean?
I think he's enjoying himself. We'll just say that.
Was it a picture of him in a thong?
It wasn't him. It was the beautiful scenery around him.
Well, that's cool. Well, I didn't see him. Did we get our invite?
I didn't see it.
No, this is.
He says
cool.
Appears to be another good day for the markets. U.S. Futures are up. Good morning, America, from the island of Corchula.
Where the hell is that?
It's in Croatia, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
so he's in Croatia this week. Or for the last couple of weeks, and then he should be back on the show next week. But if you want to see some beautiful Croatian scenery, check out Kenny Polcari's Twitter, at Kenny Polcari, who, of course, joins us every Tuesday, usually right at this time. But he's on
That's
vacation.
That's become a big destination place for a lot of people going on vacation.
Well, from what I know, I don't know much about it. One thing I know, wasn't Tony Kukoc from Croatia?
Yes.
I think he was. Beautiful scenery, and yet still a little bit cheaper than going to some of the other places in Europe.
Well, everybody wants to go to
good food, good beaches.
What's the capital of Serbia too? They want to go to what the hell's the name of
Is Serbia safe yet?
I'm not so sure, but yeah. But what's the one?
Because I think Croatia is like considered safe.
Yeah,
I don't know about Serbia, Belgrade or Belgrade or whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of cities over there. People that weren't, you know, we weren't able to see forever because they were behind the Iron Curtain, and now, like, well, how's that for an old term? But,
right.
But they're those cities are marvelous. A lot of young people want to go over to those cities.
Oh yeah, and you know, those are big time basketball factories. Those Eastern European countries are producing some of the best NBA talent. Serbia, Croatia, every year they're producing two or three NBA draft picks that are becoming big time players in the league.
Did you ever meet my buddy?
Very interesting,
Nebushka, that I used to have a tip of beer with at Tripoli once in a while. Neb.
I did once. Real loud, boisterous guy. Big guy.
Big, huge man.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's going to tell him to shut up. But he was.
God, no.
I mean,
didn't you say he was, like, on the national team?
He was
team
a Serbian national team, yeah.
So he must have been a big-time player.
He was. I'm going to say he was a solid 6'6". His shoulders were two to three times wider than mine.
If you're on the Serbian national team, like, that's the equivalent of playing for Duke.
Yeah.
I mean, you're that good.
He was a.
You're not necessarily an NBA player, but you're probably a professional player.
He knew Kukoc pretty well.
I bet he did.
I'm sure they played against each other over there. But as the Lithuanians used to say about a guy in the middle, they say he takes up space. This dude, I can imagine him going up for a ball and like three guys around him flying. You know,
well, oh yeah, and 6'6". I mean, he might not have even been a guy in the middle. He might have been a three.
Just well, you know, some of those guys. I mean,
those guys. Like Kukoc was 6'11".
Yeah. He might have been a little more than 6'6", but he wasn't like 6'9", or anything, maybe 6'. But the interesting part about when you look at basketball players that are better than people, you know, in their time, and you wonder why. You always think that, well, some people are just faster and can jump higher and so forth, but a lot of them are just stronger. I mean, they're just way stronger. That's how they're able to get space and shoot. And other people can't.
Yeah, no question about it.
And I mean, you look,
and that's how some of them, like Charles Barkley, for example, that aren't even that tall.
Yeah,
they play much taller than they are because they're so strong and big shoulders and big butt and all that.
Yeah, well, man, the guy who was the center for Baltimore for Wes Unseld, what was he, 6'9"? I mean, nobody was stronger than that guy.
Right.
But I mean, you look at the people as they get older. I mean, we've had a bunch of things at Notre Dame where they put, you know, the older players up in the rafters and so forth, and they don't really retire the number. They just put the name up there, but you can use the number again. And when you look at guys like Austin Carr, who probably was, you know, 10 pounds heavier than maybe another person for his height when he played ball, and you don't realize how strong. Well, now the guy, he's like not even fat, and the dude's got to wear a 54 coat. I mean, he's huge. I mean, Adrian Dantley's the same way. I mean, these are incredibly strong people. It just happened when they were younger to be slender and fast. You know, slenderer and fast. But, I mean, you look at the pictures of those guys, they were absolutely ripped when they played. They probably were 15 pounds heavier than the guy they were playing against and just as fast.
I mean, makes a big difference.
I mean, and they, you know, they would like move into somebody, kind of almost lock them down with their weight, take one step back and go up. You sit there, how does Adrian Dantley at 6'4 shoot over those guys? Because he made body contact first. He recovers and out, and they can't recover.
Yep.
Right?
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
And that's how they would get loose balls. That's how they would get rebounds. I mean, everything.
And it's, I mean, strength is just a real big thing, really, in any sport. You think it sort of isn't, but even look at the guys that win the sprinting things.
Well, you're right about that, but you were talking earlier about the difficulty in hitting a major league pitch. Think about how bad it hurts your hands when you use a wood bat and you don't hit it square.
Oh.
And that's on like a 65 mile per hour pitch. How are these guys' hands and arms so strong that they can take the hacks that they take? And you know, they get jammed, they break their bat, whatever. I mean, that would like break my hands.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look at the guys that are, even you know, people look at like golfers and so forth, and like, you know, Arnold Palmer, you know, the late Arnold Palmer, I mean, he was in his, you know, in his late 60s. And Gary Player says, geez, you know, the guy, he can't turn, he can't do anything, he can still hit the ball, he's still got the forearms of a blacksmith. I mean, you know, these guys are, you watch that U.S. Open? I haven't played golf, and I used to play a real lot. And I tell you what, you look at the people that are strong enough to get out of that rough the way it is, that is not easy. That's not whacking the ball on a fairway. I mean, you got to come down just right. You got to have, when that grass doesn't all fly and stuff, because you're not coming down hard. You are. I mean, those guys, if they come down, that's how you can almost break an arm if they hit something doing that.
Yeah.
And some of them have. I mean, they come down on a root or a stone or something. You know what I'm surprised on? Maybe there was a guy, and I don't know the rules about this, but one of the guy who won, like on the 17th hole, he lands in this huge divot in the middle of the fairway. Now, I know when you and I play, the rules of golf are you play it where it is, even out of a divot. But I can't imagine in the U.S. Open that the divots are not replaced or filled up with something, that there actually would be one in the middle of a fairway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought they would sort of instantly replace them.
You don't see them shaking any of that stuff in there. You know,
they just leave them?
I think, well, you see the caddies replace them. But if they don't, nobody has the, what do you call it, a little shaker with the dirt and the
right, with
seed.
The sand or whatever that
and
is.
And one in seed, so it just grows over again. But yeah. I mean, you don't see them ever doing that. I mean, I don't know why.
Maybe they do that in the morning or at night or something.
Yeah, maybe, because I saw, what's his name, Bruce Koepka. He whacked one on one of the holes, and he ended up on the cart path. And he hit it off the cart path.
Yikes.
So I was talking to our buddy Sully, who knows all about golf at the trip, and he said, yeah, well, he goes, they'll let you know where you can drop it. Then you've got a choice. You can either, if you don't like the drop area, the guys hit it off the cart path.
It's Brooks Koepka, by the way, not Bruce.
Brooks Koepka, whatever. I mean,
no, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, you know, I got one of the names right.
He's only 29, by the way.
He's just spectacular.
Just turned 29, so he's got a lot of years left of major. Man, the guy finishes top two or three, in, it seems like, in every major.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, he's right up there. I mean, Arnold Palmer finished second in every major at least once.
Isn't that, I mean, it's like, yeah, they win a ton of them, but then you also, all the ones that they could have won, that they, I mean, they're in every single one.
There's certain people, that when the harder the tournament gets, the same 15 people are always hunting around.
It's true. It's so true.
I mean, but he, yeah, so he ended up whacking it off the pavement, or the, whatever, the asphalt. Because, you know, the other side of it was like a fence. So they probably said, if you're going to, you know, put it further, you know, no further, closer to the hole, you got to come over here. And he said, well, it must be like under a tree or something. He said, I'm not going to do that. I said, it from here. And he whacked it like it was on a fairway. I mean, I'm guessing he came in with a new club the next day, but that's just a guess. And you and I would say, I'm not wrecking my club just for this shot, but if you're playing for that kind of money, you don't worry about the club so much. But yeah, it was interesting. I'm surprised. Boy, the weather out there was like here. 4 days in a row, everybody wearing a sweater, and I didn't see the sun once, did you?
Well, in the Bay Area, in the summer months, that's sometimes their coldest months.
Well, it's...
But typically on Pebble Beach, though, it's not like that.
No, Pebble Beach is pretty far down from San Francisco.
Right. So, I don't know how far down it is, but that seemed a little unusual.
I can't believe the houses that are there. You know, there weren't houses there, I mean, years and years ago. You never saw any houses there, at least that close. Some of those things are pretty awesome. Plus, they're a little close for you and me playing.
Well, yeah, I would. I couldn't play that course, obviously.
Why not?
Well, I mean, I could, but it wouldn't be pretty for anyone.
Well, I mean, it's my friends have told me that it's not that hard. If you play when they regularly cut the grass, if you play from a regular tee, the only holes that are spectacular are the last few.
Right.
But the rest of it, I mean, they all claim it's Spyglass a lot nicer. Because they used to play in all four, when it was a Bing Crosby, he played in four courses, right? Was just the last day on Pebble Beach, or the last 2 days? When they had the Pro-Am, when all the different people playing the Pro-Am?
By the way, Pebble Beach is 120 miles south of San Francisco.
Yeah, it's a ways.
I thought it was much closer than that.
No, it's a ways.
I thought it was maybe like 60 miles.
Well, I mean,
it's like straight west of Fresno.
It's like 40, 45 miles down to San Jose, so it's pretty fairly close to San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose seems to be about the halfway point between San Francisco and
yeah, it's about halfway.
Monterey.
So what do you make of Cubs issues? I mean, I don't think the Cubs are necessarily any worse, but I think a lot of these other teams are better.
Well, I think the Cubs, I mean, they have some issues. They've had some bullpen issues that are well documented. They've had some inconsistencies on offense so far. And then now you throw in, you know, Hendricks missing some time due to injury. They need Kimbrel to get right and get on the roster and kind of solidify the bullpen and we'll see what happens. Schwarber's been a lot better, which has been good. Hayward has been maybe slightly better than he was the last couple of years, but he's still not that good.
This guy they just signed. How many more guys are like that are running around unsigned?
Not many.
But I mean, I guess it's I wonder if they makes you wonder that he should be there close, but every year that he's been, I can't wait for Jeff to get up here because I want to ask him about this Facebook launch and this new cryptocurrency. I wonder because he'll of course know all about it. I'm assuming he will. So Matt, do you think there's we only got 30 seconds? But how many? There's any more guys that haven't signed?
I think there's one other guy. Is it Dallas Keuchel that is a pretty high level pitcher that is out there that's available? Other than that, you know, there's like a handful of good relief pitchers that are on non-contending teams that will absolutely be in play on the trade deadline.
But no guys that are still hanging around from spring. Like
no, I think just the one other guy. I think there was just two guys.
Okay.
The Cubs, as a fan, I like the fact that they just paid the guy and didn't have to give up prospects for him. Cause I don't care about the Ricketts money, but.
Right.
But, these other guys you're going to have to trade prospects for, and the Cubs, you know, are kind of replenishing their farm system, and I don't really want them to trade a bunch of prospects. Yeah, they've already given all the major leagues their best players, Eloy Jimenez and Gleyber Torres and all these guys that are around the league that are killing it, that were part of the Cubs farm system. You know, we don't need to give up any more of those
guys. Yeah, Jimenez looks like it's the the Joe Carter of our era. Hope not. SP Futures up 1850. We'll come back by Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. Mr. Weber on the board. In studio, we have Mr. Jeff Joseph, as we do every Tuesday, editorial director and publisher at Luckbox Magazine. What's the difference between an editorial director and an editor?
A little bit of seniority, I guess.
Ah.
Right.
They used to say main something something in charge.
Right. Well, my editor-in-chief likes to call himself editor-and-chief.
Ah.
So. But editorial director really is responsible for outlining the editorial as opposed to actually editing the editorial. So
that guy gave me a card once. Was it MF? MMFIC. Main mofo in charge.
There you go.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of business cards, a couple days ago something prompted me to ask somebody I was with a question. Do you remember, and Tom, you have the years on you that might allow you to recall this, as I do. Do you remember something called the Turtle Club, or do you remember the question, are you a turtle? Does that
Yes. You know what? I remember the question. I'm not exactly sure what the answer was.
You bet your sweet. Do you remember that? Yeah?
Yeah, but what was the context? I do remember that.
It wasn't anything. It was like an informal club, or it was a statement that people made who had that commonality. Are you a turtle? And there was an answer that was you had to respond with to affirm that you were a turtle. I have no idea what it was in reference to, and that's what I was trying to recall as well. If anybody out there knows, let us know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, remember with like the Bond film, you have a light, I prefer a lighter until they go bad or something. Wasn't that the line in the one? If SP Futures up 17.50, NASDAQ Futures up 16. What do you make of... Well, first of all, before we talk about Facebook and their cryptocurrency, Libra, they're claiming they're going to launch. What is your feel? Not so much on the Bitcoin price or anything like that, but just in general, because you've impressed me as being this kind of worldly wise dude. And when people start to drop back out of currencies, and a lot of people are thinking there really shouldn't be any going forward. What do you make of that? Is there going to be a demand for something like that, an alternative currency that you don't have to, I'll say, let everyone know what you're doing everywhere? I mean, people are going to say only crooks are going to use it, but I'm not so sure I'm going to go there. But what do you think of that? In Sweden, if they were, I know they backed off on some of this because they actually wanted to go currencyless in Sweden, didn't they?
I don't know about Sweden wanting to go without currency, but I do know that the notion of a decentralized currency has caught up a lot of steam for a long time, particularly among privacy and libertarian and anti-Fed types who, you know, just like the notion of a decentralized currency and don't like Fed interference and what that entails. But that's more conceptual. In the practical stage, I think you see the trouble that Bitcoin and all the other cryptocurrencies have had since then. You know, they've attracted a core audience of speculators and actual consumers who are perhaps of the kind of Silk Road underbelly, right, who have reasons for keeping transactions secret. And there's been speculators and there's been miners that have created a cottage industry. But when you see a mainstream firm like Facebook making a move into a crypto platform, that's certainly something to take a look at. I just think the speculative value of the currency for most investors is entirely off the table. You know, so we're sitting around 9,300 today. It was sitting at 6,000. It was once at 18,000, and it was once far, far below that. And no one knows what they're really investing in or why. It's a hedge against something, but God knows what. So, you know, cryptocurrencies are interesting, but I think the Wall Street's adopted, and as I have adopted the mentality that as a speculative tool, as a hedging tool, its purpose has not yet been defined. But clearly the underpinnings, the blockchain for settlement and for record keeping and accounting offers an amazing amount of opportunity, and I think that's what's being fully explored and exploited right now by a number of different firms, is looking how to use a blockchain for better record keeping in general, you know. And then clearly in terms of settlement and money transference, there's some advantages as well. And what Libra, Facebook's new initiative, is a direct forward-looking assault on the dominance that PayPal has assumed over the last 10 years, and which in many ways you can say is one of the largest banks out there. It's doing an extraordinary amount of transactions on a daily basis. It's doing transactions that traditional banking doesn't want to do anymore, and it'd be really hard to challenge Facebook in its current position. And that's what I think Libra and other blockchain initiatives have the opportunity to do.
You mentioned earlier, I don't know if it's good or bad, that I got a few years standing on my head. Yes, I mean, some of the stuff, Jeff, there's a lot of things that I'll say progress and, you know, whatever, the new world seems to make different than the old days. But one thing it doesn't is there's a certain core principles that I think in a lot of areas that you can't run around. You can disguise them for a while, but they fall right back down into what you're doing. One of them is in the banking industry. My stepfather used to, he was the main guy, but there was another guy that helped out, and there was a guy who actually sat there. St. John Fisher, we grew up at a pretty sizable credit union. You know, it was a big parish. If people wanted loans, they could go there, and people would, and they used to pay 3%, and I think the loans were 6, maybe 5.5 or something for cars and stuff for people. And they were, and the interesting part is what you just mentioned, and bring me this is weirdo story. I was a young kid, and Barney, the old guy, who, if you gave him your $5, Barney would like put it in a manual journal. And I said to Barney, you know, at a young age, I was curious. I said, Barney, how's it going? He goes, well, it's going pretty good, but not great. And I go, how come? He says, well, an awful lot of people are putting their money in here, and we're paying them 3%. We need a few more loans, and we're not going to be able to pay them. You know, so there's a certain circular move to this, and what you just mentioned is that PayPal is doing stuff regular banks used to do. The concept of you giving money to banks essentially for free, or you and I have to give our money to them for free because the interest rates sound so low, and the Fed turning around and paying them overnight, and them making really a 1.5, maybe 2%, if you count fees, maybe maybe almost 2%, 2.25% spin on that money, massive amounts of dough. They have no interest in being a bank anymore. Well, why should they work as hard as PayPal to go out and find people? Why should they, if your firm has is owed money by the state of Illinois, which everybody friggin' is, why would they take care of those receivables for it? They don't have to. I mean, we've managed to get to the point where these banks are so powerful, but they don't have to do any. What I'll say to the, it's not like they don't give any loans. I mean, but they love the big loans. I mean, they're gonna give somebody a loan to buy another company of $2 billion or something. But we've essentially allowed them to leave the banking business. And other people, like you say, PayPal and smaller banks are picking that up, or other people are now becoming the banks of last resort, which means in my world, the Fed is essentially losing control of these people. Mm-hmm. I mean, of the money supply and the other things. And I don't know if that's so good. I mean, a bank is a business to be an intermediary between the people who have the wealth and other people who have ideas to create even more wealth, right? I mean, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't know that they are right now, or at least to a huge extent. And I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, the Fed clearly has to evolve, and so does the legislature to figure out how to regulate and have oversight over these expanding roles within fintech. But you're right about what's quietly happened with PayPal. PayPal isn't just peer-to-peer transfer. Last month they hit a milestone of $10 billion in lending. Over 650,000 loans have been made by PayPal.
Now, who's their typical person they give a loan to?
Small business.
Okay.
They're doing what the SBIC and the local banks and the regional banks used to do.
See, I think that's absolutely unconscionable in the sense that the Fed is... Not that these guys can do it. It's America, and if they can do it better, I'm all power to them. But you don't want to become China. They don't even know what their money supply is, because they've essentially, for lack of a better term, payday loan companies running the place in the provinces and stuff. Right.
Right.
I mean, so you can't. How do you even have an idea what you're doing? I mean, driving people out of the system is not. You think the Fed even knows that that's what's happening or cares?
True. I hear you.
So, I mean, now back to, like, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that there would be an alternative currency. I mean, I hope would, but in my mind, it has to be, and again, I'm doing too much talking, you know, the currency has to have some sort of value to it. Now, somebody's going to say, well, yeah, what about the dollar? I mean, but by and large, I mean, if you go back to concentration camps, cigarettes were the medium of exchange because they had a value unto themselves. I mean, I'm going to think, in my opinion, I'm asking you whether you think I'm nuts, even more so than you already do. I think it's going to have to be somebody like you, for instance, that has, you know, 90 billion barrels of oil, and the dollar or the whatever it is, the Jeff currency is going to, every dollar represents, you know, a quart of oil or something. Or there needs to be some value to the thing, or it just blows. I mean, otherwise, because every currency that has not had value has blown throughout history, right? Or am I wrong?
Oh, that's right. And even the U.S. dollar, of course, has this full faith and credit backing, which cryptocurrencies don't have. In fact, to the contrary, when you look at the number of implosions by crypto banks and crypto miners and the complete loss of funds at several crypto brokerage firms, not to mention last month, a study of 90 different cryptocurrency exchanges yield the fact that volume has been overstated by 86% on cryptocurrency exchanges. So the amount of actual trading occurring isn't accurate either. So nobody knows what this platform is. And yes, some speculators have made millions and a couple have made billions, but this is not ready for prime time.
How much would we have made if 3-4 years ago we actually researched this one day. Some of the stuff my listeners sent stuff in, Jeff, and I look at, you know, we could have got one of the machines. Bitcoin machine. Yeah. No, not the mine, to sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And put it in, there's a couple on the south side that are in, shall we say, stores where a lot of the people, they're going to go from the lottery ticket line to the thing was like $4,500. It was, you know, it was a big time ATF machine. No, it was more than that. It was like $20,000.
Sure.
But it was, you could use it for an ATM afterward. It combined kind of both of them. But my brother went and bought $20 worth of Bitcoin. Well, the fee was like $5. So he ended up with, it was like $4 fee, $1 exchange fee. Exchange to what? And then, so he got like $15 worth of Bitcoin. I'm sure he never even poked the 15 back anywhere. It's probably, who knows what it's worth now, but fact is, you know, so every guy that went to the machine, we got like $5 worth. So I'll bet those guys put the machines in those places made dough.
Yeah, had to.
So what's going on in your world? I got all kinds of emails regarding last week. with these esports.
Well, just to cap up on the last conversation, I'm not pleased to say this, but my best trade in the last 5 years was probably buying Bitcoin at 300 and selling it at 1,000.
Wow!
So I'm not proud of that transaction yet. It was a good.
You know, how did you actually do it? At that time, who did you have to go through?
I bought one Bitcoin through CoinWallet just to see what the process was.
Okay.
Yeah, and then that was. It was more about the process, but it was, in a short period of time, it started running up. I held on to it. Once it was a 3X, I'm like, I have to take this off the table.
Well, the trader that you are, I got to get something out of this.
I had to take it away, and of course,
what was the?
Now it's
how much was the? How much was the transaction charge?
$12.
I mean, when you went to sell it at 1,000, was the bid and offer, 1,000 bid at 1,001, or was there a big spread?
The bid offer was around $75, $80 at that time.
So, yeah. So 8%?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never got to do that in the OEX bid.
Exactly.
That's crazy. Right. But so what else is new in your world? I mean, you're the one who comes up with all the topics. But
you tell me. You said
well, what's coming on the next magazine? What's the big? I got a bunch of letters on it. I was talking to my buddy Dr. Eric yesterday on the show, and I've been last the other night at the local bar, and he's a professor over at Columbia, and he says they actually have classes in gaming.
They do, huh?
And it's for people to design the games and so forth. They haven't really thought of having like a team. He goes, but it might be on somebody's agenda. I mean, he just didn't know about it yet. But they don't normally have teams in anything over there. He said we're Loyola and DePaul, would. But he was interested. I go, wow. So these guys, yeah, they actually have people and they come in and watch guys play. And he goes, we should probably bring that up. Who knows? We could use some more students.
Well, our next issue of Luckbox, actually, we're expecting to receive it today from the printer. That'll be the advance overnight copies, and it'll be on newsstands in about a week or so, and it'll be released at luckboxmagazine.com in a couple of days. But we were having an editor's meeting just recapping the issue as to what we thought would be most actionable as a result of it. And there's a number of investment opportunities that are cited in public companies that represent some opportunity in the space. But we collectively agreed that we think that high school teachers and high school parents that read the section about the high school league, which now has over 60,000 players nationally, and that will be a very actionable result where people will want to take this directly to their high schools and say, let's open up a team. It's a nominal expense, and it seems to be very rewarding for the students because they're paying lots of scholarships. The universities are paying lots of scholarships. So
you're usurping the chess team and the
I'm still chess team first and foremost. That's where my fandom lies. But you have to admit it's not quite as sexy.
No, yeah. This is sort of interesting. The
Paul writes in and he says brands who entered or signed new deals in esports in the last month include the U.S. Army, Doritos, Fila, Ticketmaster, Warner Music, and a bunch of others.
Wow, yeah. U.S. Army, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sure, that's their next fighter pilots are coming from there.
Yeah, well, it's was it the last Starfighter to get him off a video game, right? I'm actually there's a skill set there that I think a lot of it's probably accretive for other stuff in life. It's not anything you do. I think it helps you out later. I mean, whatever the skill set is, you pick up. You think it's like every class in college was as boring as I thought they were. At some point in my life, whatever was taught there seemed like it made sense, or you needed it somewhere. Even though you wonder when you're there, what the hell am I learning, kind of a thing. But I talked to a...
Here, we got another question here. Michael writes in, did Jeff or anyone on his team cover the Pokemon event that happened in Chicago this last weekend?
No, we didn't. We went to print before that. We were aware of it, but we didn't. We did not cover that.
So do you know anything about it? Because I think there was like thousands of people from all over the world that came into the city. And if you were in the downtown area, especially over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, they were walking around aimlessly around Buckingham Fountain and Millennium Park and Grant Park with their phones chasing these Pokemon.
Right. I saw some of the images, and many were dressed that way as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's, I don't know as much about that event, but I do know it attracted a large crowd.
Jeff, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind shifting gears a little bit. I ran into a gentleman the other night. I'm always interested for new people to come in and talk about stuff. And he's a publisher, not necessarily of a magazine, but of sports books and other books where they, like, you know, if when the World Series is over, they want a book coming out the next day about the World Series type, yes, of thing. And it's interesting. He was giving me this whole story about the distribution system and stuff. And he said they're almost at a point now where, you know, the Borders couldn't compete with the Amazons and so forth for a long time, and Walmarts and those kinds of people. He said, but now it's almost coming back the other way. He goes, you're not that far away from being able to walk into a Borders or a traditional bookstore and order pretty much anything you wanted, and it just prints in the back room.
Yeah, those are, I believe the acronym is SEP, Special Edition Publications, or right, something very similar to that. And they're a very, very big business, particularly with on-demand printing capabilities that you've just alluded to. And they're event-based, so they guarantee a large following. It's a smart business. If you know there's, you know, if you know there's going to be a very large esports gathering of, say, 40, 50,000 people coming to see a tournament, or if there's a large sports event in a city, or, you know, whatever it might be, you know there's an embedded audience, and, you know, people will want to walk back with something that kind of commemorates their participation. And the on-demand printing aspect guarantees that there's a efficiency of the business model, that you're not printing to excess. It's one of the reasons why traditional publishing is so troubled, because particularly magazines, because you end up printing much more than's ultimately consumed. A good pull for a magazine at a newsstand and in bookstores nationwide, and I wish there still was Borders, but now it's Barnes & Noble or Books A Million, a good pull is 35%, or maybe, you know, an excellent pull is 50%, and there's magazines that live with 20%. That means that, you know, the majority of the magazines that go to newsstand ultimately are disposed of. And that's just the model. It's just the way it's always been. And that's why, of course, a subscriber model is, you know, more important, because you know your subscriber's getting it and you print to your amount of subscribers. But on-demand printing for special editions that are event-based publications, like what your friend was referring to, make a lot of sense, because there's a real efficiency on the balance sheet. You're printing what you need to print to sell, where there's already a identified demand.
Well, our buddy Thomas, who helps produce once in a while, he's an artiste, and he's done the artwork for a couple of these children's books. And I think that the level of publishing, and I'm asking you because you know, the book is not big enough to be in, you know, like your magazine. I'm going to send them 100, and if I sell 50, I'm still okay.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the marketing is online. But whenever you order one, they print it. There's no, like, first printing, second printing. So is that happening in a lot of books that, you know, I mean, the traditional one was somebody prints, you know, like Hillary's book, where they print 500,000 of them, so they can be in every Walmart, yeah, and every whatever. And all of a sudden, oh, God, it's a second printing, and that's where you make money, I guess, in your second printing or third. I mean, that's what I'm asking you about the industry. I don't know.
That's right.
But is there a lot of books like the one Thomas is involved, even though it's a pretty good seller? It's not anywhere. You just, if you go on and you want it, they print it and send it to you.
That's the upside and the downside. The upside is a low barrier to entry, because you have that efficiency. You're printing what you're selling. But what you lose is distribution. So this has become the model of the independent publisher, where they can, through on-demand publishing, just, you know, create an inventory that responds to orders received. But because they're not part of a retail distribution network, they lose a lot of visibility and they lose a lot of potential audience.
Can you do both, or some combination?
You generally do the first, with the idea of hoping to migrate to the second. So you get some traction, you have some visibility with your title, and it's something then you can move to another publisher down the road.
So it's not like, instead of you sending 50 magazines or books to Walmart, you send them 5, and the second they're sold, the next day or two, or another 5.
No. Yeah, that's
not happening yet.
That doesn't work for Walmart.
Oh, no, I mean, that's what That's what this guy's point was.
Right.
He said their distribution system has gotten so involved that they almost can't be sprightly like the other guys, actually, the book guys. But the other question, I mean, this is a reason why I know something about the business is because not your business necessarily, but my uncle was is involved in installing and fixing printing presses for years, and I love the business, and he used to tell me all about it, and how it's got to be. I mean, your magazine looks pretty sharp. It's gonna be a real long time before anybody prints anything like that in the back of a Barnes and Noble.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about glossy pages, and the thing that a magazine has to have is the folder has to be. The hardest part is the cutter and the folder.
Yeah, and the binding.
And the binding. Right. Because, I mean, yes. I mean, a newspaper, if you look at your pages, the newspaper is essentially gross. No magazine producer. I mean, if you were to, the edges can be off by a 16th of an inch and nobody will notice it. But if your magazine, if one page is not the same size, you notice it.
That's right. If you have what's called a perfect binding, and that's as opposed to a staple saddle stitch, that always requires its own hardware, and those are large machines of many printing companies.
Well, they're bad. They're millions and millions of dollars.
That's right. Yeah.
Matter of fact, this is going back a ways, that the centerfold in Playboy was done in a totally separate place. Some guy had a printing press in Ohio somewhere, and he did just the centerfold.
Yeah, and then they had to insert those.
Then they had to insert them. But but normally it's the folder and the. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, there are how many people? There was Dayton Press and the guys up in London, Ontario, and then there were RH now, and our Donnelly was a big one. I don't know where they are now, but that's an interesting business. They had to make it look right.
Donnelly is the largest. They spun out their own printing company called LSC.
Okay.
LSC Communications.
S&P Futures still up 1850, NASDAQ Futures up 1850, right on the same button. Dow Futures are up like 150, so we're off to the races this morning with the Fed meeting today, but not announcing until tomorrow. Press conference tomorrow. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for
stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right
now. Oh, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Jeff Joseph. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 17. We're pretty flying back and forth here at the 17 level or 1850 like a second ago, but we've been up the whole morning. NASDAQ futures up 17 and a quarter, Dow futures up 148. So we've got the Fed meeting starting today. We obviously are encouraging them to do something. I think it might be cut rates, just saying. The big headlines today are Facebook's trying to launch a new cryptocurrency called Libra. We've got, Trump ripping ECB chief for pushing down the euro. They've been getting away with this for years. Okay, so 10-year yield drops to 2.03 ahead of a Fed rate decision, which is, like, really low. Okay, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 203 now, 1.7%. FTSE up 79, 1%. CAC around 92, 1.7%. So Europe is on fire this morning. Nikkei down 150, 1.7%. I don't know where that came from. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 261. It's 1%, a full 1% oil. Up 8%, 5201. Absolutely stuck at this low number. Brent, 60.92, so the spread is $10.91. RBOB 168, so it's down 30 cents in the last few months. Gold, however, continues to rally. It's up 1120, 1354. It's kind of blown through this 1350 number. We'll see if it can hold it. And silver making yet another run at 15 bucks, up 11 cents, 1494. Like I said before, the 10-year yield, 2.03. The Bund, 10-year, minus 0.3%. Japan, minus 0.12%. I don't get that, but I haven't gotten it for a while. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue, and Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, although we're still under a dense fog advisory that will last until 10 a.m. this morning, especially right near the lakefront. The fog is starting to dissipate further inland, but still affecting the lakefront. But no accidents or issues coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Normal travel times about an hour and 2 minutes from O'Hare into downtown. Eisenhower starting to build heavily after a good start. Same with the Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking okay. Only crash in the area right now. We had an earlier crash on the Tri-State southbound up in the northern burbs just before Everett Road. That's causing some delays. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds and fog early before some sunshine this afternoon. A bit warmer than yesterday, with a high of 70. Could reach the mid to upper 70s in the suburbs. But in the city, a high of just 70. Right now it's overcast and 58 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 79. In sports, Crosstown Classic 2019. First pitch is tonight at Wrigley Field, 7 o'clock. Cubs
versus the White Sox. It'll be Hamels versus Nova in that matchup at Wrigley. Both teams kind of sputtering, so this will be a big series. Diamondbacks were off last night as well. They host Colorado later on tonight. Chief.
Jeff, did you are you trading this beyond the meat?
Well, I'm certainly looking at it today, that's for sure. Up about 26 last spring.
Yeah, 27-44, 197. This is these guys came out on 5-2 at what, $45?
Yeah.
And they ran up to 72 that day, traded as high as 190 maybe a week and a half ago. And on the same day it traded 190, I'm going to say it collapsed back down. Well, no, not that day. It traded 190, traded 186.40 with a low 147. The next day it was down to 125, so that's a shocker. Now it's back up to 170. You asked earlier about what it takes for people to like follow something. Jeff, nobody knows what this company does. They don't care. I mean, you hate like hell to do such a thing, but first of all, I never would. But I could call my clients and say, you know what? I've got this tip that, West African turtle eggs are the next big, and people say, go ahead.
That's right.
It's amazing what people will do to chase returns and chase whatever, and they will find these things like there's no tomorrow.
We could not ignore the Beyond Meat story, so in the issue of Luckbox that comes out today, we do have a story on it, and it's not the typical story because it's, I won't get down to the punchline of it.
No, you got to buy the magazine.
Or get a free through.
Yeah,
or get a free through you. But, the IPO was underpriced by 160%, which is a note to Wall Street that food tech and ag tech is an area that there is demand. And regardless of what the reasons, as you said, that sometimes you can't put your finger on it, particularly when people don't know exactly what it is. But it does tell you where the puck might be headed in terms of what lies ahead for food tech and ag tech technologies and what people are consuming. So that was the overall perspective of where we went with it and had some forward thoughts as to what other companies might be in a position to generate upside from this type of clear market enthusiasm.
Well, Jeff, as you probably can figure out, unfortunately, I don't want to go too far down this road in my everything's a conspiracy type of mentality I'm starting to get. But, I don't trust these guys as far as I can throw them.
Does that happen naturally when you get older, or is that just you? Does everyone older people I talk to, it's like the conspiracy theories are just rampant.
Well, you know what? You've heard the same BS so many times, and it's all the same story. And it never changes. So finally you... But I mean, one of the things that you know, Maddie, since we've been doing the show together and long before, one of the singular most, I'm going to say, what would the term be, Jeff? I'm going to say contrived issue is an IPO, where you go to some firm, you pay them an awful lot of money, they tell you the place is worth 50, then they run out on the road and tell everybody else it's really worth 100. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that the day it gets up there, it goes higher because they don't want to lose any money because they actually take control of it for, 2 seconds. They're the underwriter. They actually do, the title does pass through them. And so you've got an Uber and a Lyft that come out that are absolute clunkers, right?
Right.
Where down, the companies are gagging. They try and buy the stock and people basically shove it right where the sun don't shine. So the last thing you want to do is be the next IPO because they're going to price you at zero if they can, right? Because the last thing they want is another one where they say they'll price you at 60 and 2 days later it's 50. So you wonder if these guys coming out at 45, if the 45 should have been 50 or 60 all along.
Well, you might as well be the editorial director of our magazine.
Okay.
Because there's also an article in this issue coming out tomorrow that is called IPOs Are Not Real that actually goes down the exact path that you've just discussed. We talk about Pinterest and Lyft and Uber and Beyond Meat's IPOs and what the reality is in terms of investor access to these and how they're being priced and being manipulated. We agree with the sentiment that you just expressed.
Well, but you get the same people on all three sides of a transaction.
That's right.
And where else?
And they're not real.
Right. I mean, you were on the trading floor for a while. If you're a broker, you represent one person. When Audrey's in the real estate business, she represents, if she ever – it gets the listing and the buyer walks in, the first thing she does is say, oh, by the way, it's my listing. Mm-hmm. So, right? I mean, you don't ever... This is the only place where you could literally have water on both shoulders and your butt at the same time, right?
David tweets us. He says, Beyond Meat is pricey, but it could also be overhyped because he's reading reports that it's not necessarily even better for you.
Well, it's...
I don't know if that's true or not, but... And he points to an article here from the New York Post. Meatless fast food isn't necessarily healthy.
If you were alive in the, I'm going to say 60s, and they came out, when do you suppose, what do they call it, oleomargarine came out, Jeff?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It was considered.
Can't believe it's not butter and all that.
Well, but it's, yeah, and now there isn't a heart surgeon around that didn't tell you you should have just stuck with the butter. It's way better for you.
That's right.
I mean, I'm close. Yeah. I mean, how many people are in the grave because they only ate margarine? I mean, not only did you have to eat that crap, now you're dead. Anyway, then these IPOs, it comes down, but now here's one, it's a high flyer. And it's all over the place, right? And everybody can't wait to get involved in it. I mean, Bitcoin, we talked about earlier, people wanted to get in it because it's going up, right?
Well, we have a note here on Twitter. Hasn't Facebook invaded our lives enough, and now you sign up for their Libra cryptocurrency? Have they been honest about security at any point? No. I mean, why would you trust them on crypto?
It's such a good point. Facebook clearly has had the worst year. You could argue that Tesla's had a bad year, but I cannot imagine a company having a worse year than Facebook. And then having to eliminate all those fake accounts, which they did, billions of fake accounts have been deleted. I still am wondering what is taking so long for the collective class action suit from all the advertisers who bought CPMs, who bought impressions based on Facebook account size and their own metrics, and now have learned that all that data was inaccurate, that it was a lie. Yet that was the trigger and the metric used to price their advertising on the Facebook network. So this is a company that I just think has so much trouble ahead for it. And I've never understood it. I mean, you know, my rant, it was with some folks not too long ago when people were talking about...
I'm not the only person that rants. That's good.
I don't understand Facebook. First of all, I'm very social media savvy, but I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook because I was on 10 years ago for maybe one day, and people came out of the woodwork that... I recalled why I didn't want them to be part of my life. the only way to get them back out again was to leave Facebook. But you know, I think we all remember 20 years ago around the holidays that Christmas card that would come that wasn't a card. This family chose to write a letter. And they would sit down and tell you about little Jimmy in second grade, his baseball prowess, and the five-year-old's play that she was in, and how Dad took a new job, and they took a family vacation to Lake Geneva, and they really loved the cabin, and they're thinking about redoing their kitchen. And it was such a, you know, a WTF response that you would have. It's like, what makes these people think that I really have to know all these nauseating intricacies of their existence? Why do I need to know everything about their life? Why are they so compelled to share everything about their life ad nauseum? Yet that's what Facebook is every single day. We used to laugh when we got those letters. We'd read them tongue in cheek, you know, and think, why are they sending this letter instead of a card?
You don't sound like a guy who takes a picture of his dinner at some fancy restaurant and sends it to other people before he piles into it.
I don't understand that at all, the picture of my food.
So you're saying, no, he's nowhere near he's not as near as old as me. Is he getting as grumpy as me, man?
I'm telling you, you all shift toward that same
path. By the way, Jeff,
maybe I will too.
I'm going to give you a piece of advice.
Yes.
As you know, I'm beginning to love you here, man. Do not go on CNBC because you're not ready.
Well, I did that years ago.
So did I, by the way.
But, and I'll tell you what happened after I was on CNBC. The first person that came up to me said, you know, next time we have to apply a little bit more makeup. Your laugh lines made you look like a walrus.
Oh, God.
So that was that happened within 5 minutes of being off air.
So Jan Neal and I, we're going to make believe we're a couple of really attractive ladies on CNBC.
So I have a face for radio. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, me too. And Jan, maybe not. You know, he could be the
No, that's why we're all on the radio, right?
I'll
jump in on that.
How does this sound, Jan? So, Mr. Joseph, you just mentioned that Facebook's had a rough year and you wouldn't want to be them, and blah, 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 and they've got this problem, that problem. By the way, Mr. Joseph, do you have any idea where their stock was on January 1st?
No. It's around 190 now. Where is it? Where was it?
I'm going to sack you and say, I'm going to say 130.
130, right.
So, Mr. Joseph, you ever had a year like that? Up 50%? When you're now you're saying that these people had a bad year, the shareholders love this company.
Did I tell you about my Bitcoin trade?
Well, yeah. am I right, Jen? As long as it's going up, they don't care how many people you killed for that.
That's right.
I mean,
you're the hero, but it's what can you do for me tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, the stock's up. Well, what do you mean? The market doesn't seem there's a problem. What makes you think that your assessment of the problems they're in is so much better than the markets, Mr. Joseph?
That's true. Same with Tesla.
Yeah,
right.
But then you know you're the Dave Stockman of Stocks and Jacks.
Great.
Did you? He came out and he was talking about how, John, if you read this, how the Fed will be absolutely ignorant if they raise rates, and how the encouraging people to get more loans now is exactly what we don't need. I mean, cause we need more loans, like we need whatever, another nose or something. I was going to say something worse, but where are we? Where we had this massive run up into the thing, Jan, or are we going to continue to go up? If the skin in the game has it, they're going to remove the word patient for tomorrow, and Powell's going to be very dovish at his news conference, and they're going to lower rates in July. That everything I read, that's the chalk, as they used to say at the chalk.
Right.
And I don't know. Do you think they're liable to surprise one way or the other? Either lower them tomorrow or lower them by a half, like the president wants them to do, or say screw you guys, we're not lowering them all this year. I don't know. Do you think they're going to go off script?
I think there could be a screw you guys.
Really?
I think there could be something like that.
They'll have to tone it down. I mean,
right.
I mean, even if Powell has, you know, a spine of steel, which I don't know that he has, I can't imagine, given the way, and then politics enters all this stuff, I can't imagine the way the president set him up, that if he says something tomorrow that takes the last 4 days' rally away from the market, that the guy's not going to be, you know, figuratively crucified in a White House lawn. I mean, is there any way that doesn't happen? I mean, why would you want, the guy makes 150 grand a year, why would you want that job if you're going to be vilified and every expert in the country is going to say what an idiot you are now for the next month? I mean, do you want to turn on the...
That part is true, but he's also been a little, a little talky going the other way at times on these things. So, It just wouldn't surprise me if he bucked that trend or bucked Trump, however you want to look at it a little bit. And it just wouldn't surprise me, Tom. I'll put it to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, because then he's gonna have to live with them. And I'm not saying he shouldn't do that, by the way.
Right. Well, exactly.
You know, but I'm saying it appears to me, if I'm him, and, you know, Jeff writes a magazine, he's aware of this stuff. What do you think the fallout in the next month for him? Every person on CNBC that wants the stock market up, that's all they care about is charging people money and have it go up, which they don't do anything to enhance. They just buy stock for you and up it goes. Every single person is going to be saying that the Fed is wrong, they got to lower rates, they got to do this, and then we got a Fed guy. When's Trump going to put two new governors there? When's this and that? I mean, it's going to be brutal for a month. I mean, or am I totally wrong on this? Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I would agree that I wouldn't be surprised if there's a less than accommodating move to the administration, just because, you know, it's the administration has been so clearly jawboning the market and trying to jawbone the Fed that I wouldn't be surprised to see some resistance to that.
Well, I mean, but the next question is, if that resistance, instead of us being up, 16 spoos on Thursday morning, if we're down 40, what's the flashback?
He can blame anyone he wants to, but it's still going to roll up to the president, and the president knows that. That's why he's been so outspoken about the Fed, because he made the decision to to make the market a barometer for the success of his administration. That was so ill-advised. It's amazing to me that when he had competent people around him that understood how the markets actually worked, that they wouldn't advise against that. But, you know, he did the same thing with polling back then, too. And now he realizes, well, maybe I shouldn't be talking about polling so much. I don't know why he hasn't come to that conclusion about the market, but he has assigned the market metric as being an indicator of the success of his presidency, and he's going to pay the price for it.
John and Maddie, did you just hear the same way I did? Maybe Mr. Jeff mentioned that he no longer has competent people around him? Did I hear that correctly?
I did hear that.
I heard that, too. Jeff, was that what you meant to say?
Well...
Without so much as saying it?
No, I actually don't believe that's the case. I believe that, for the most part, people who find themselves there, you know, have a certain degree of competence that
one would hope.
Right. You know, there are some people like Pompeo that, you know, that I have a high regard for.
Yeah,
anyways. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, there's people that have been, you know, maligned, from his past. For example, and this is always a controversial name, but Anthony Scaramucci, I know that guy well, and he's nothing short of brilliant, quite frankly.
Dr. J speaks pretty highly of him as well.
Yeah, and I know him personally, and he's an extremely smart, intelligent man. And, you know, he's Harvard Law, Tufts before that, self-made, come from modest means, you know, rising up to the top of a $12 billion hedge fund firm. There's nothing ignorant about that man. Yet, of course, that's how he's been portrayed by the press. But he made his own mistakes. He could have been a longer-term advisor in that administration, but, you know, flamed out for some ridiculous reason, you know, with that New York Times reporter. But, there's a lot of competent people that find themselves around the president. But the question with this president is whether or not he listens to them.
Well, I think when you talk about people that are incredibly bright, and there are a real lot of them out there that are a lot brighter than me, with the obviously Harvard and everything else, somehow they get themselves fairly insulated, and they don't pick up. I mean, you obviously, one of the reasons why I like you as a guest, you figured out, and Jan certainly has as well. He's been with me forever. It's not necessarily what you say; it's what people hear. And when you have an attitude about you that somehow you've got it figured out and you're not willing to listen to anybody else, and traders have that attitude generally. I mean, you were a trader, Janet, but it's been beaten out of me and Jan, because I mean I understand that. I mean, I wouldn't come across in a job like he did, as just because I made a lot of money here and there in the other place, everything's a deal, everything's my way or the highway today. I mean, the whole persona of the man. I mean, even Dr. J said to me, I've known him forever. I've never seen him act like that or come across like that. Mm. I mean, but he came across horribly.
Yep.
And it doesn't make him bad. It means that he was at that spot. These are all different skill sets, Jeff. I mean, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just saying I'm using you for everybody. I mean, when people ask me and they'll say, what do you think the problem is with our political system? I'm going to say that the difference in the skill set between being elected president right now and being qualified for the job has never been wider. They're just two totally separate skill sets right now. I mean,
so you're saying campaigning versus actually doing the job?
Yeah. I mean, it's a massively different skill set. And some people, back in the day, I mean, like the Roosevelts of the world, realized that there was a difference and spent months and months studying before they got into the job. I mean, but this guy actually thinks because he had enough people like him to put him in there that he must be talented. I don't think he's learned a thing since he's been there. I mean, like other people sort of have. I mean, there's just a man. I mean, if you were to, you know, put guys, maybe who was it, Jim Baker, somebody like that. Look at his career in Washington and business. There's a guy that probably was incredibly well qualified to be president. You wouldn't want that guy in a stump speech anywhere.
That's right.
Right? And yet, I mean, can you imagine Abraham Lincoln today? I mean, a brilliant writer, brilliant orator, and where would you put that guy with that hairdo and those looks, right? I mean, some say
on radio,
yeah, on radio. I mean, where would Roosevelt have gone essentially on crutches? Nowhere. if he wouldn't have been able to cover up the fact that he was in a wheelchair. Right? Who would have voted for him? Even in today's world, where we're not supposed to worry about stuff like that, who would have voted for him? I think there is a difference. I mean, Bill Clinton. I mean, the master campaigner. I'm not so sure he was a good president. Matter of fact, he probably wasn't. What I'm saying is somehow we got to get this back together, or the people have to figure that. I mean, I would say that if the three of us, the three-headed monster, we'll even bring Maddie with us, and in the Oval Office, the first conversation Jeff and John, you and the three of us would have would be, okay, here are the things we know a lot about. Here are the things we don't. How the hell do we get somebody to cover us in the areas we don't?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I think these other guys have an ego that's different than that. I know all this stuff. I know I don't. I don't. I couldn't name you a head of country in Africa if my life depended on it. Now, maybe one or two, or South America. I mean, can you? You probably do better than me. But if it's securities related, economics related, maybe we can make a stab at it, right? Anyway, S&P futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 17. Jeff, John, Maddie, a lot of fun this morning. Thank all you guys. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.